Okay, so I've been super busy this month with exams in college. So just for anyone that doesn't know, which will probably be nearly everyone that's listening to this, because this is going out to an international audience. Most people don't know anything about my personal life, but I'm in college currently. I'm in Dublin City University doing physical education and biology. So I'm studying to be a PE and biology teacher. So I'm just about finished my first year. I have one more exam left in a couple of days' time. So it's currently just the 28th of April here as I record this. So my last exam is on Tuesday the 30th. So I've just been super busy this month and I didn't manage to get a guest for this month. But I've been meaning to do a solo podcast for a while. I actually haven't done a solo podcast since I'm almost certain it was when I did my podcast on Bill Hartman's intensive. When I did that in October, I did Bill's intensive in September 2018, but I did the podcast in October 2018. Anyway, but I did want to do a podcast on sort of my coaching journey over the last 2 years. So I've transitioned from being a physical preparation coach to being a sports coach. And the sport in which I do coach is hurling. So hurling has always been my number one sport. It's the sport that really sort of grasped, am I saying that word right? Grabbed, I'll say, I can say that word better, grabbed my soul. I just completely fell in love with the sport and I've always been in love with it ever since. Now I love all sport, but hurling's always been my number one sport, and it's the main sport I played growing up. I also played Gaelic football as well, and did some other activities. I swam for a few years, played soccer in school, played rugby in school, but hurling was always my number one sport. But I think a lot of people listening to this probably wouldn't know either. I actually have been out of physical preparation, strength and conditioning for almost 7 years now. I haven't been involved in S&C since 2017. Now, I still finished off my master's in S&C in 2020, during COVID, but I haven't been involved as a physical preparation coach with a team in any capacity for 7 years now. And the last sort of work I did within physical preparation would have been with a tennis player in 2019. But aside from that, 2017 was the last time I was involved with a team. And the reason for that was, listen, I still love high performance. I still love anything to do with human performance. I think the whole field is fascinating, and anyone that listens to my podcast knows I'm a universalist. Like I have diverse interests, and basically I'm just fascinated with humans and life and the human experience. But obviously strength and conditioning, physical preparation has been a major part of my life journey to date. And but 2017, I just kind of came a bit fatigued with it, and I sort of, not that I made a promise with myself, but I was like, if I ever get involved again with a team, I want to be the head coach of the team, and really the only sport I could be a head coach of would be hurling, maybe Gaelic football, but hurling was again more the sport I played growing up, and it's the one I have the best understanding of and the most knowledge about. So just fast track a little bit then to COVID. Obviously, we had a lot more downtime, and so while I said hurling is my number one sport, growing up I was a massive soccer fan too. I was an absolute maniac Liverpool supporter, and I still am a Liverpool supporter, and I love watching Liverpool. And obviously I love the whole Klopp era, and unfortunately now Klopp is stepping down. But in fairness, he only had another 2 years left, so he was going to be leaving at some stage. He was never going to last forever. But I was a mad Liverpool supporter, and just for everyone listening now, I'm going 37. I started supporting Liverpool in the mid 90s when we were not good. Okay. So it's gas when I hear all like the young Liverpool supporters nowadays giving out, like, and it's just like, man, you don't know how good you have it. Like Champions League, Premier League, FA Cup, League Cups, Super Cup, World Cup, like with the Klopp era, you've just had it so good. Like, whereas, and entertaining football to go with that too. Whereas, like, I grew up like when Roy Evans was the manager, and Liverpool actually still played entertaining football then, but Roy Evans, Gerard Houllier, but like at the time, Man United were so dominant. They were just like, it was the Ferguson era, and just, United were such a great team at that time, such a dominant team. And I wasn't one of those bitter Liverpool supporters either. I actually really respected United. I just thought they were just winners, They were just, I thought they were great. I never had any sort of bad feeling towards them. Of course, they were our greatest rivals and all that, but Yeah, so Liverpool supporter, but during COVID, I really got back into watching soccer. So really got back into watching it, and that really then got me into learning more about the game. And then that kind of led me towards tactical periodization. So tactical periodization is a credit to a gentleman called Vítor Farad. He's a Portuguese sports scientist, and Fergus Connolly would know him well. Fergus actually spent some time with him. And if anyone who is a strength and conditioning coach, physical preparation coach, who has Game Changer, Fergus's book, you'd actually be pretty familiar with Vítor Farad. Is Vítor Farad or Farade? I think Farade. I think that's how you say it. I'll say Vítor Farade just for the rest of the conversation. But you'd be familiar with Farade's work because it's similar to what Fergus had in Game Changer. So, Fergus talks about the game moments. You have your attacking moment, your defensive moment, and then you have those two transition moments. So you have a transition moment where you go from attacking to defending, which is a defensive transition, and then you go from defending to attacking, which is an attacking transition. So those game moments are an element of tactical periodization from Faraday, and like the morpho cycle, kind of matching your physical demands to your tactical demands for that day's training, and how your weekly sort of schedule looks in terms of loading, and how you're planning out your sort of tactical information across the week, and the tactical components you want to focus on throughout the week in your training sessions. So with Farade too, his most known mentee is Jose Mourinho. And there's many other people who've been influenced by Farade's work, probably nearly every modern day coach is to some elements. And tactical periodization has bled into other sports like rugby, and even out in Gaelic games, people talk about it. And whenever you hear anyone say the word game model, that's essentially, it essentially came from this concept of tactical periodization. And there's many books and articles you can read on it. But I got pretty heavy into reading that, and I just really liked the way it broke the game down into these component parts. So like a big thing in tactical periodization, if I just peel it back a little bit, so any coach who listens to this who's involved in any type of sport preparation probably knows about the four elements, the four pillars of preparation. And I say there's five because I count lifestyle as an element in that. I kind of nearly see lifestyle as something that encircles the four elements, and people are probably like, well, what are the four elements? So again, the four, and if I say them, I say for anyone that doesn't know the four elements, I'd say now if I say them, there'd be a lot of you going, oh yeah, of course. So like the four elements, you have your physical preparation, your tactical preparation, so your physical preparation, your technical preparation, your tactical preparation, and then your psychological preparation. So like they're kind of those main four buckets or four elements we look at when we're talking about sport preparation. And then I would always put lifestyle along with those four elements, and kind of again, lifestyle is something that maybe like wraps around those four elements. So if you read most literature on sport preparation, they'll always talk about, so the physical, the technical, the tactical, the psychological, and kind of say, of course, we know all four integrated, and again, I'll put lifestyle in there. So say all five are integrated, they're interlinked with each other, and they're usually presented in a very sort of, they're equally as important. And I still think, to a degree they are, but Faraday argued that in team sports, he would argue that the tactical element out of all of those components is the most important, and everything else is subservient to that. So your physical preparation should serve what you want to do tactically. Your technical preparation should serve what you want to do tactically, and your psychological preparation should serve what you want to do tactically. So this whole concept of tactical periodization kind of grew from this. And a big concept or a big thing from tactical periodization is your game model. So your game model essentially is how you want your team to play. And there are a few different factors that determine that, but probably the most two important ones are the ability of the players that you have, and then your sort of belief as a coach, like how you want to play. So I'll probably keep my references more to soccer, even though I've implemented this in hurling because we've an international audience here. But like in soccer, like are you more of a possession-based dominant coach who likes to play front-footed, attacking football, so very attacking-minded, or are you a little more pragmatic? Are you a little more like I like to be super ultra tight at the back and just hit on a counter? And then also you got to consider too, well, what playing group do I have? What is the ability of my players? Because you may want to implement a certain playing style, but you may not have the players to do that. And then you got to decide, am I going to try and ram the system into this group of players, even though they might be able to carry it out, or am I going to compromise and say, no, I'm going to actually fit the system to the players rather than jam these players into a system that they mightn't be able to do. And you see coaches who do both, like so basically, like your game on is kind of like your identity of your team. There are, and as I said, there are other factors that are considered in that. If you read them, tactical periodization, like they'll talk about like cultural considerations, the kind of history of the club or the team that you would, are they, you know, have they a history of winning, or are they perennial losers, or are they kind of just like a mid-table team? So the game model was something I started reading up of a lot in that tactical periodization piece. And obviously then there's another, the other part of tactical periodization is how you marry up your physical preparation with what you want to do tactically as well, and what that looks like on a week-to-week basis. So I started reading a lot of this, and you know, in my mind I was like, you know, how would I take this and utilize this if I was to coach a hurling team? And like there was already elements in tactical periodization that I was aware of. So like, I mean, principles of play have been around for a long time, long before I even heard anything about tactical periodization. So your principles of play are like there's principles to attack and play, and there's a principles to defensive play. And it just got me more involved in reading this stuff. So, you know, your attacking principles, obviously, you know, so when your team is in possession, the principle of attack play are the first thing you got to do is create space. And again, if anyone's read Game Changer by Fergus, he goes into this, like, but you know, space creation is important. And you know, you create space by making the pitch wider and longer, and that's called, wider is width and longer is depth. So you're making the pitch wider horizontally and longer vertically, so you're expanding the playing area. So nearly goes back into Bill Hartman's kind of things of expansion and compression, because that's when you're defending, then you're trying to compress a specific area of the field. But going back to the attacking principles, we have space creation, which is made by movement going wider and longer, so vertical or horizontal and vertical, width and depth. And then you're trying to open up pockets of spaces, or you're trying to open up the defensive lines in front of the opposition so that you can penetrate those lines, and you usually penetrate those by support runs. So the third man runs, like the up back through concept in soccer, and you can use that concept too in Gaelic football and hurling. And then like things like you know, when you're in the final third and you're close to the opposition goal, things like creativity and innovation, and you know, trying to set up one-on-ones and you know, scoring opportunities. And you see like lots of like schematics of like, you know, we build in the back and then we create in the middle third, and then we deliver from the middle third into the attacking third, and then we execute in the attacking third, or something. You know, you kind of see schematics of soccer fields like that, like build, create, score. In hurling, in Gaelic games, you might see something like build, deliver, score, because usually in a game like hurling, some people might say that middle third is like your delivery zone in, or you could build all the way through your zone one, zone twos into zone three, where the final third is. So yeah, I got really heavy into all that, and I kind of moved away from a lot of my reading in, say, more just physical preparation, sports science stuff, and kind of got more into this sport coaching realm. And then a lot of reading, when you get into a lot of reading, then gets you down into skill acquisition and dynamic systems, and you know, the dynamics of skill acquisition and stuff like that. So like, you know, a lot of stuff by Keith Davids and all the people that he would associate with, and you know, that book he has, The Dynamics of Skill Acquisition, Constraints-Led Approach and stuff like that. So you're kind of getting more back into that type of reading too, of how you modify your games and stuff like that, and how they align to the principles of play. And obviously then you have your defensive principles of play then. So it's just like, it's funny because the defensive principles of play all begin with D. It's like, you know, so you gotta, the first thing's desire. You gotta work to be off the ball. And then it's all about slowing down the opposition. So delaying their build-up play or their attack, and then taking away their space by denying their space. And then like, you know, disrupting their play, and then turning it over. So it's like desire, delay, deny, disrupt. Another one's deflect, to deflect, to make the opposition go in a direction that you want them to go, which is usually sideways or backwards. And if you do that, you're obviously respecting then the principles of delaying them and denying them space. So again, just it just brought more clarity into like, oh, okay, there, you know, there's a framework you can build here for chaotic invasion sports like hurling, like Gaelic football, like soccer. And it just kind of made the game a lot more understandable. So I really got into that, and then that led me into reading like a lot of books, like on Pep Guardiola. Read a great biography on him by Guillaume Balle, really good one. Another Way to Win, the second edition, I read it a couple of times, really enjoyed that. And then that turned me on then to Johan Cruyff, and I read a biography and his autobiography. And then Cruyff, you get into like the total football of the Dutch team in the 70s, and read on Rinus Michels, who was the coach of that Dutch team, the great Ajax team too in the 70s. And then that kind of sent me down a rabbit hole with soccer, and I read Inverting the Pyramid. which is a really, really good book. And I read a good few other soccer books as well. And just a lot of stuff then on articles and tactical periodization. And even Shane Mangan, who's an Irish researcher, he put a really good paper on how to modify the tactical periodization concept from soccer and apply that to Gaelic football. So that's a really good paper as well. And there's another one out about tactical periodization for rugby. That's actually one from the NSCA. And again, the big concept there is the game model and then the moments of the game. So again, the moments of the game being when you're in possession attacking, when you're out of possession defending, and then when you transition between being in possession and out of possession. So going from attack to defense, which is a defensive transition, then going from defense to attack, which is attacking transition. And then some other sports then would have some other elements too. So but basically, nearly every invasion-based sports has those four moments of the game plus set pieces. So like the set pieces in soccer are going to be like your tip off, which is going to happen after every goal or how every game kicks off. And then obviously your kick outs, your corners, your throw-ins, and then the odd drop ball here and there. Hurling, the major set piece in a sport like hurling, and again for any international people who don't know hurling, just YouTube it, you'll see a few clips of it. And I know if you've never seen it, it's crazy when you look at it. But again, when you grow up and that's the sport you play, it's like second nature to you, okay? The major set piece in hurling would be the puck out, how the game restarts with our goalkeepers. That would be our major one. But there's also like line balls and frees and 65s and a throw ball as well. That's how we start the game, and how sometimes a referee may restart a game if depending on what preceded that. Sometimes it's kind of like a drop ball in soccer. Like if something just happened, like if a team was in possession and they had to put a ball out, and sometimes you need to restart a game. Sometimes in hurling too, and in Gaelic football, there's a throw ball restart. They're not that common, but the major one in hurling is the puck out. So again, just going through this, it kind of, I suppose the way my brain thinks, I like to be able to put things into categories and kind of build a framework. Like something that looks so chaotic initially from the outside, like an invasion game, like hurling and football. And I go, well, hold on now. Like there's, okay, it actually isn't as disjointed as you think. There is an organ, you know. And then you go back to your dynamic systems theory, and it's like, well, there is a self-organization element to this as well. Like, you know, and it's just like there are certain elements of the game you can almost guarantee are always going to happen. Like there's always going to be an attacking moment, there's always going to be a defending moment, there's always going to be a transition moment between those two moments. There's always going to be attacking transition, there's always going to be defensive transition. Like, and just specific to hurling, there's always going to be puck outs, there's always going to be a line ball. Okay, the amount may vary, but it's like you can, so there's certain things you definitely can plan for, and then going back to how you want to play and the players you have, you can start to implement more of a playing style, and it just gives your training process too more clarity and more intention. So that was very, very exciting. So I was reading a lot of this. This would have been towards the tail end of 2021, going into 2022, and my club Nafina had just lost a county final, and it was a bit of a devastating loss too because they really should have won. It was the first time they were in a county final, but fairness to Kilmacud Crokes, the team who beat them, came back well and won it in extra time. But I was kind of thinking, you know, I think I'd like to get back into coaching. And I had a really good meeting with my friend, really good friend of mine, who was the coach of the Fianna Síochána hurling team in 22 and still is today, Neil O'Callaghan. We call him Nelly. And I sat down and I just spoke to him about, like, you know, I think my next ambition is to be a head coach of a hurling team. And we talked about maybe just going up and shadowing and for 2022. No, I didn't end up doing it in 2022. I just don't really know why I didn't do it in 2022. I just kind of got sidetracked. But towards the end of 2022 anyway, just, I don't know why it happened, but the current manager of the second senior team, so this would be the senior team below the team that my friend Nelly manages. So Nelly manages like what are called the senior one team, so the main men's team. So senior in Ireland is under 18. So if you're 18 years of age and up, you're considered a senior player. And the second team, so just the B team essentially, their manager contacted me and just asked, "Do I want to? Would I consider going in as a coach?" And so I had a little bit think about it, and I was like, "Yeah," and kind of. I know this will maybe sound a little bit silly too, but from reading the background of Guardiola, and I'm not comparing myself to Pep at all in any way, but it's like that was his start too, Barca B, and he really wanted to go Barca B. But if you read up why he did that, it was kind of a clever way of thinking. He was like, listen, Barca B, they're in Division 4, I think something at the time. He's like, there's going to be like no press coverage of this. Like he could try out, he could just experiment, he could do like mad shit he could just try out his thoughts, like, and see how they go. And that's exactly kind of what I was thinking too. You know, it was a nice, safe environment to go into first, and it was a safe environment to fail essentially. So I could try out all these concepts that I've been, writing about in my notes and just thinking about from all the background reading I've been doing, around tactical periodization, around game models, around the principles of play. So that was the end of 2022, going to 2023, and yeah, I said to go in and start coaching. And so roughly then about March 2023 is when I really took over the coaching, and so I took this team over and essentially coached them all the way through 2023, and we actually had a really, really, really good season. And I suppose things I took away from it were, it was so rewarding and so fulfilling. I think just to be able to, what I felt anyway, provide a really, really good environment for the boys to flourish in for the group. Now, the group I took over are fantastic, and they are fantastic. And I'm still involved with this group this year, or a lot of them. I'm still involved with this team. Now, there's been a lot of turnover player wise, just lads traveling and some lads coming back. But they're a great group of lads, and just a fantastic group to work with. But we're in what would be known as Division Four over here in our league, and we won all our 11 games out of 11, got promoted to Division Three, which is our main target because we were too good for Division Four. Like, it's not that it's a bad standard, but we wanted to get out of there because from Division Three upwards, the standard is quite high, and we're in Division Three this year now, and the standard is considerably higher than what it was in Division Four last year. But we also had a really good run in our championship. So for the international listeners, the way this works is we have a league campaign and then we have a championship campaign. Now, usually championship is usually the target for most teams. Some teams, they don't prioritize the league as much, but we'd been in Division Four for like 10 years with that second team, so we really wanted to get out of it, and we did. And we had a really good championship campaign. And because the other thing with championship is too, the way it works here too is we are a set, our club is quite large with a lot of numbers, so our second team then plays in the third tier of senior championship, but that third tier for some other clubs is the tier that their first team plays in. So we are usually always playing like the first teams of like some smaller clubs. So they're always quite strong, those teams. Like, those teams would usually have like a larger budget from a financial standpoint. And it's always their first pick of players. So they usually always have consistent group of players at training, whereas we're the B team, and kind of the flux of our players between the first team and then even the third team blows, kind of it drags our guys around a little bit. But anyway, I just want to say that when I stepped in, my number one goal for the team last year was just to get lads to love the game again. For kind of boys who kind of fallen out of love with it, or had kind of stepped away for maybe a year or two, or who just weren't enjoying the hurling anymore. Because I'm just like, why did any of us get involved in playing hurling? Why does anyone play any sport? It's because at some point that sport gave you fulfillment, it gave you meaning, it gave you purpose. You just got a sense of joy and bliss from it. Like, I can just, hurling to me reminds me of where my father in Ireland is from. He's from a place called Tipperary, and hurling is in many parts of Tipperary is like, it's like rugby in New Zealand. It's a religion in many pockets of Tip, like. And so it reminds me of my grandparents, it reminds me of me growing up with my friends down there. Like, it represents so much more than a sport. Hours just down in a hurling field, pucking on summer days and hanging around with friends, the whole social aspect. And hurling is so much more than, as I said, just a game there. Then obviously some of my greatest memories and moments were playing games and winning things with my friends and losing really hurtful games with your friends, going through those moments. I don't want to say hurtful games, but your ups and your downs that you experience with your mates. And I think too, when we're adults too, we stop playing. And sometimes sport is the last expression of play adults have. And as well, for men that play hurling and for the females that play camogie, so camogie is the Irish word for essentially women's hurling. So for hurling and for camogie, for men and for men and women, males, females, the sport they play is a lot of the time the last opportunity they have for expressive free play. So for me, I wanted training to always be fun. I wanted the environment to be one of love. Now, you might necessarily have to, consciously say those words, but it's a feeling that you wanted to sort of emulate out into the environment. But I wanted the environment to be fun, loving, safe. And a lot of times those nights too, they're therapy for people. You know, lads coming in and they're pucking the ball before training, and you know, they're talking about their week, you know, how did your exams go? How's the job going? How's the new baby? So, like, to me, that's the really important element. And last year I just wanted boys to fall in love with the game again, and it was funny, it just grew. Like, it was like our numbers just grew exponentially throughout the year, which I was delighted with. Lads were coming back, and you know, I think guys on the team were telling like former teammates, you know, you should come back, like it's good, like the environment's good, the atmosphere is great, it's really positive environment. And that's another thing too, like, because you know, most people, like a lot of us, have really bad self-talk throughout the day. You know, some of us are in jobs that we just don't get any fulfillment from, or you know, intrinsic reward from, and it can kind of drag us down. And then, like, you're thinking, oh, I have to go training tonight now, and I have this coach, and he's fucking roaring at me, he's telling me I'm shite, and I just don't want to play, and it's more negative reinforcement. Whereas, like, at least if that element of someone's life is like, all right, maybe job wise things aren't great at the moment in terms of I'm not getting great fulfillment, but at least I've got Tuesday and Thursday night to look forward to with the team I play for, because my coach is fucking super positive, you know, and in a way that, like, he holds us to a standard, but you know, he's always telling us that fucking, you know, all he wants is effort, and he believes in us, and you know, he shows us like that he cares for us, and he's always there in time, and he sets up, and you know, he's you know, that's kind of what I was trying to put in place for the boys, you know. And I'm a very you know, I've obviously been influenced. Like, I'm 37 now, and I wouldn't have came with these thoughts naturally, or this way of thinking naturally. It's from years of, you know, reading, research, personal development. So, like, you know, I obviously want to be more of a player-centered coach. I like to use more guided discovery methods, very much like the TGFU model elements of that. So for people that don't know what that is, it's like teaching games for understanding, where like you use like a lot of probing questions, and I'm very player-centered in terms of I want the players to have the ownership, and using like the self-determination model, like DC and Ryan type stuff. So, yeah, and like I didn't do any mad presentation last year. I just went in, started training straight away, and I always made sure I was on time. I set up. I always taught out my games, try to be as clear with like kind of the learning intentions of the session. Sometimes I wouldn't. Sometimes I just get into it and let the boys play. But the overall thing was just to make it fun for the lads. It was just to make it fun for them, and again, just to make them, as I kept saying, fall in love with the game again. Just remember why we got into this in the first place. And I would be shaped too on like John Wooden, and I think a lot of international people would know who John Wooden is, particularly if you're a basketball person, the great John Wooden. And you know, I'd always paraphrase his definition of winning, which was peace of mind, knowing you did your best. Now, it's his definition is slightly longer than that, or his actual quote is longer than that. But I would always say, you know, to me, winning is just peace of mind, knowing you did your best. Because, like, and again, so that's what I meant earlier when I said, like, you know, I didn't come to coach with these current beliefs or thoughts. Like, it's evolved through, you know, my reading over the years, my research, my own personal development. So, like, when I was a young man, like, it was black and white. Like, winning was the final score on the scoreboard. That was it. Like, but as you get a little older and a little wiser, and you start to reflect on things and think more deeply about things, you realize we can't control the result on the scoreboard. Like, that's an outcome. All we can control is processes. And the processes we're in control of is our preparation and our effort and our attitude. That's what we can control. So, like, my whole thing is, like, listen, all you can judge yourself on or your teammates on is effort and your preparation. And it's like, if you boys do your very best, there's nothing more you can ask of yourselves or your teammates. So if you can walk off a pitch with peace of mind, you're winners, no matter what. Because the score on the scoreboard is influenced by too many external factors. Referee, and not only is there a referee, there's two linesmen, there's four umpires. That's four officials who could have an impact on the final score. You've got illness, someone could just get sick on the day of a game or going into a game. Injury, someone could get injured going into the game, at the start of a game, near the end of the game. Weather, and I know some people go, well, weather, you know, is not the same for both teams, but it can change over the course of a game. You know, a team might have a really strong breeze in the first half and then it dies down the second half. You know, stuff like that. And then sometimes the opposition are just better. The opposition are just better on the day, things click for them. So, But what you are always in control of is your preparation. You're in control of your physical preparation, you're in control of your technical preparation, you're in control of your tactical preparation, and you're in control of your mental preparation. And then you're also in control of the lifestyle that helps to support those four elements of preparation. So I would never say to the boys anything about winning, or we have to win in terms of the classical understanding. As I said, peace of mind, knowing you did your best. So I really like Paul Kilgannon's Jeff acronym, judge effort first. So that's kind of what I'm getting at when I say peace of mind, knowing you did your best. So yeah, last year was a great journey. Won our league, got promoted, which was our main aim, and then we got to a championship semi-final, which was sort of unexpected. And unfortunately we were beaten by 2 points, and but overall it was a great year, great learnings, loved it, and very, very fulfilling, very rewarding. And so this year I've taken over that team now. So there was a manager I was with last year. He was kind of, the kind of main head figure, but I did all the coaching last year. And this year now I've taken over as head coach as well as manager, even though I just like to say head coach. I don't know what it is. I just don't like the name manager. It's like, I don't like to manage people. I like to facilitate. I'm a facilitator. But this year then with the group of boys, I actually did give them a presentation, and it mainly just I mainly just wanted to cover my philosophy as a coach, as well as kind of just go through the principles of play. Just making sure that the boys understood what were the principles behind attacking and defending, and then getting into like sort of the other elements of game sports in terms of so if we go back to that game model then, so if we're talking about the moments of the game, so we have attack and defend and transition, then you have your set pieces, and kind of getting the boys aware of that sort of knowledge. Because last year I didn't do I didn't I specifically, and I did this kind of purposely, I didn't want to go in and start doing like heavy technical tacticals. I just wanted, again, my goal last year, get boys to love playing the game, but on really fun, enjoyable, engaging, that's the word, engaging sessions. Now don't get me wrong, I was still last year, through the games I used, through the modified games, to the constraints, using a constraints led approach essentially, and using modified games to respect the constraints led approach, I was still getting lads to, I suppose, implicitly learn principles of play. So you might use a gates game to work on width, you might use a multiple gates game to work on switching. You might use an end zone game to work on depth. You might use a certain game to work on counter pressing. You might use a certain game to work on turnovers, where you're working on the principles of delay, deny, dispossess for defensive play. You may w use a certain game to work on third man runs and support play, so respecting the principle of support play. So, that I was doing, but I wasn't explicitly maybe sit down the boys as much, or sitting down in a classroom, or writing out on the whiteboard. Now and again I did, but not too much. But at the start of the year, I wanted to make sure that I kind of had put a PowerPoint presentation together, and kind of went over, one, my philosophy, so why I wanted to coach, and kind of two, kind of my principles to, or not even my principles, but the principles of team sport play essentially. Just so kind of, because what I do want to give the lads to is some sort of develop their game intelligence, so that these boys then, one, it's going to facilitate them better as players, but also two, if they want to go forward and pay it forward, as Mike Boyle would say, to be coaches in their own right too. I think too it's important to have operational language as well, that so if we say certain things, so like when you're saying zone one, zone two, zone three, the pitch, lads know what that is. If you say like a pass versus a delivery, and every team kind of has their own language, that they have certain own things, like but it's to make sure that there's a common language, so that when we're talking, that that's there too. But I just want to pull this up here now, actually, because I think it's just good to, just so yeah. And the other thing too, it's funny when you talk about like philosophy and principles and strategy and tactics, people get that really confused. It even confuses me sometimes. I remember like going to fucking dictionaries online and saying, "What the fuck is the difference between a strategy and a tactic?" And I still not 100% sure if I get it. So, but like a philosophy is essentially a belief system. And it's influenced by many things, but it's a belief system. Whereas principles are usually laws that are always applicable regardless of context. So that's usually what a principle is. It's always true no matter what. irregardless of context, because nearly everything needs a context, but usually that's one definition I saw of a principle. And then the difference between a strategy and a tactic, a strategy is more like a broad goal or a broad aim, whereas a tactic is like how you put a strategy into action. So like we'll say like a principle of attack plays, we as I spoke about earlier on, is space creation. You got to create space, and you can do that again through width and depth. So that would be the principle. Now a strategy will be letting the ball in early, long and wide, maybe to the full forward line, and a tactic might be to specifically play it to a specific corner forward where he is trying to take on one of the weaker corner backs of a team. That might be the specific tactic for that game. So that's kind of how I see it in my own mind. But I tell you what, though, as well, just for any coach, listen, I've said this to a number of coaches, write down your philosophy. Why do you coach? What's your why? And then write down your system. Like Bill Hartman's always, what's your system? What's your model? So that's what I did with the boys. And it really does help clarify so many things. And it's really important you go back and revisit that an awful lot of time. But I suppose I want to talk more about the why. So I had a slide here for my why. And for me, it's like it's three words: facilitate human potential. And I was saying to the boys, like, I want the boys to use the skills that they master from hurling to help facilitate them in their life journey. And I think I said here in the actual slide, to have the skills you learn and the experience you have from hurling to transcend the white lines and to have a positive impact on your lives, you know? And so there's a little quote here, like, you know, to teach or learn life through sport. So again, it was just, again, you know, facilitate the person through sport. Like help them be the best possible version of themselves through sport. And to say that again, you know, to take those skills and experience that they learn from hurling to be able to transcend the white lines and have a positive impact on their life. And for me, like what was important to do that was to create an environment of love, trust, and safety. I'm just reading the slide here as I'm looking at it. And the reason for that, the reason for love, trust, and safety is, you know, to me, right, you can only be creative and you can only be fully expressive if you feel you're in an environment that you can love, that you trust, and that you feel safe in. Now, again, people mightn't consciously think that, like it mightn't, you know, but at a subconscious level, we as humans, like we need to feel that safety. And if you read anything like by polyvagal theory by Stephen Porges, that goes into all that, you know, like you need to be able to socially engage. You have to feel that you're safe, because if you don't feel safe, you won't socially engage. You'll revert back to fight or flight, and then if fight or flight doesn't work, you'll revert back to freezing. And the big thing for me was telling the boys about, you know, the spectrum of fear and love, or love and fear. And, you know, if you think of a spectrum, and at either end of the spectrum, you have love at one end and fear at the other. And for me, love allows for creativity and self-expression, which then means you can get closer to your potential in whatever sport it is that you are competing in. Whereas fear is, if you're in a fear mode, you got amygdala firing, limbic system, you know, so the amygdala in the limbic system going crazy. And when that bad boy is firing, you have only one concern, and that is self-preservation and survival, and you ain't going to reach your potential. Now, again, like people could turn around and say, like, you know, Bobby Bowden and like maybe even Sir Alex Ferguson, like they kind of did they manage, did they coach through a bit of fear and they're still successful teams? You know, it could be true, like, but it's just not how I want to do things. You know, it's just not the it's just not what I believe in. It doesn't sit right with me, that type of coaching. You know, I would rather be less successful maybe in a trophy cabinet and have burnt less bridges and, you know, still have my players turn around and say, I'm getting married, come to my wedding, and say, win a bunch of trophies and fucking have everyone hate you. That's just me personally. So yeah, that was the big thing with me, that to create that environment. And, you know, I also told the boys, there's only two things I wanted for them and not from them. This is another thing too, very specific about that word. There's only two things I want for any group that I'd be involved in and not from them, because I don't want anything from the players. Okay? Like the only person that can determine my self-worth and my self-esteem is me. Okay? And you can't try and externalize that. Okay, that's an internal process. So there's nothing I want from anyone or any team involved. All I wanted was to set up an environment to like facilitate two things that I wanted for the group, and that was number one, to love the game, and number two, to have the courage for all of the lads to do their best. And that comes back to that definition of winning, which is peace of mind, knowing you did your best. So I summarize my philosophy as, look, I'm a facilitator, I'm not a dictator. All right. I am a player centered coach, I'm a player centered coach. I'm not a coach centered coach. So like, this isn't about me. Okay, this is about us. So we, not me. I try and coach from a position of love, not fear. And again, my definition of winning is peace of mind, knowing you did your best. I'll never ask you to win in terms of a trophy or a championship or a score on a scoreboard. Once you boys can walk off the pitch knowing you give everything you could, that's all that matters. So going back to Paul Kilcallen and Jeff, judge effort first. So that's the kind of approach I went in with it. And last year was extremely rewarding. Now, I gave that presentation this year coming into this season because I kind of wanted to just, I thought it was just good for the boys to maybe hear it. I think a lot of them who were with me last year would have felt it, would have already known it, or had a good idea of what my philosophy would have been. And then the principles are just kind of what I spoke about there. We spoke about our principles of play. So we went into five elements of preparation: the physical, the technical, tactical, the psychological, lifestyle. We just gave a definition of that. And then we spoke about game model, and then sort of, within that game model, like, what's my game model philosophy, if you like. So, and on that too, I am possession based. I love front-footed hurling, okay? Similar to like Guardiola type soccer. I like play that's creative, it's inventive, it's daring, it's entertaining, but I like it to be fun too. And I was definitely influenced by Johan Cruyff on that, like, fun and entertaining aspect, which I'll get back to now in just a second. But another key element of my philosophy is adaptability. And I have here many tools in the toolbox. So, to have multiple contingency plans. Because one thing I was reading too on the game model and tactical periodization, and it just, and again, maybe my interpretation could be wrong, but it was always like you have to have this one identity, this one way of playing. And I just felt like, I think a lot of people like could interpret that wrong too, and maybe it's not even a wrong interpretation. I think it's even just a wrong line of thought. Like, it makes no sense to me to have this just one way to play. Now, maybe an identity and a style of play. Maybe again, I'm kind of mixing semantics here, but I think a lot of people think of this game model as like you have to. Like, I think a lot of people come in and say you have to play this one way, and that's it. And I'm just like, why can't you play multiple ways? Because again, if we go back to like concepts of like adaptability and anti-fragility, like, it's like if you have only one way to do something, that's a really fragile system. That's not a robust system. Even though I know fucking Taleb says robust and anti-fragile aren't the same thing. So anyway, but like, it just made no sense to me at all. And like, I kept using the example of oh, why is his name? Bielsa at Leeds. And don't get me wrong, Bielsa at Leeds, obviously, he was a huge success, got them back in the Premier League, amazing, and the style of football he played, great and all that. But, towards the end of his time, Leeds were taking a pound. And you got all these people going, oh, is he great sticking to his principles? And I'm like, what? Like, no, not at all. Like, it just made no sense to me. I was just like, he has to get a bit more pragmatic, like, I just, to me, that just makes sense. So like, my whole thing is like if you were to say to me, what's your playing philosophy, it's like the main one would be adaptability. And I suppose it kind of goes back to your game model, and one of the main things that determines that is the ability of your playing group. There's no point in trying to play a possession based dominant game if you don't have the technical hurlers to execute that, so that's just me personally, now, like, so it's kind of like if I can play a possession-based dominant game, if it can be front-footed, if we have the playing group to do that, that's my bias. That's how I want to play. I want to be fucking all-out attack. I want to be just savage aggressive out of possession too. It'd essentially be like the hurling equivalent sort of kind of Guardiola, Klopp. Now, I know Guardiola and Klopp don't play similar styles. Guardiola is a lot more possession-based dominant. Liverpool are more about counter-pressing and turning balls over and quick transitions. But yeah, front-footed, possession-based dominant. But again, my number one, like, if we were to put it in a hierarchy, adaptability would be the most key thing. Now, going back to the fun, entertaining thing, yeah, I definitely got that from Cruyff, because just reading up on Cruyff. So like, if I was to summarize Cruyff and what I read in him, he basically was an absolute bollocks, but a genius. Like, he was like, and it's like nearly everyone, like in his biography and all, everyone's like, oh, Johan was like, he was just too clever for him. He was just, the way he thought about it, he was genius, but he was a very hard person to work with. And like just some stories in it are just brilliant. But like he was like, I'd rather fucking lose and put on a show than win playing shy. So like, and just part of me was like, yeah, I resonate with that. Because I've just, I don't know, I don't know, maybe I've just built a little bit differently. But another thing too was like, you know, how fucking, I suppose, brave he was too. Like, and there's a great story where I just love this story where he's trying to get the Barca goalkeeper to like to play more with his feet and play with a higher line too. Like he was telling the keeper, listen, I need you like outside of your box when we're up the other side, up the other end of the field. Because you gotta understand here, this is back like, this must have been back before like the back pass was ruled out, because this is like the late 80s, early 90s. And you can still back pass a football up until like 1992. But he wanted his keeper to be more like a sweeper keeper, like the more modern day keepers are, like Edison, fucking Alisson, like. And this keeper was old school, staying back in his line, like, you know. And he goes to Cruyff, he goes, yeah, but Johan, what happens if like I get lobbed by the opposition, like, you know, so like if I'm outside my box and they get a counter attack and he just pings a ball, like someone pings a ball over me, and Johan Cruyff just looks at me and goes, then you applaud. You applaud. And I just fucking remember reading that, thinking that's so funny. Just like the keeper, oh, like, what if I get lobbed? Well, then you applaud. You applaud. As if like to say that's an amazing goal to the opposition. Just going back to this whole point that Cruyff didn't really give a fuck. He just wanted to put on a good show. He wanted the football to be the overall winner. So definitely Cruyff that had an influence there. But yeah, the last, it's not even 2 years now in terms of coaching. So we're April. So I'm 13 months into this, and I'm learning all the time, and I'm, you know, I'm reading, I'm thinking, I'm always making notes, and it's a constant evolving process. And there's so many elements and strings to this bow or spokes to this wheel, you know. So obviously there's the whole coaching element where it's more the X's and O's, and it's, again, it's more about, you know, your principles of play, and again, you know, your game model. And then there's the whole emotional intelligence element of dealing with players and team selection, and you know. And any coach that knows this, you know, when you have to take a player of a team or drop them, and how you broach that and how you word it. And again, I think the best way, personally, if I was to give any advice, right, is just to be honest, tell the truth, and show your own vulnerability. You know, I think the way I open up a lot of those conversations is, listen, you know, a lot, all I can ever tell the boys is, or say to the boys, is, listen, I'm always going to try and do my best for what I think is right for the team in the moment, but I'm human. I'm not immune to mistakes. You know, I'll probably say the wrong thing at the wrong time, but I probably thought at the time it was the right thing to say. And you know, it's just, you know, again, going back to creating a safe environment, is that like, listen, that's, mistakes are good because they're learning opportunities and they're encouraged. You know, obviously, if it's the same mistake over and over again and we're not learning from it, well, then we need to have a, you know, a deeper investigation to why that is. But to create an environment where you know, you feel safe to fail, and you know, that acknowledgement, listen, that we're all human. None of us are flawless. So from a coaching standpoint, listen, I'm going to make decisions the best I can in the moment. But I know too that a lot of times I won't get it right. Sometimes I will, sometimes I won't. And I mean that in terms of like in-game play, and then when I'm having discussions with players outside, discussing why maybe they're not in the team this week. And, you know, later you reflect and say, maybe I could have worded that differently or said that differently. Or there's so many elements to it, you know. So it's amazing learning opportunity. And it's definitely been the next evolution in my whole coaching journey, you know. From initially, I was just involved with the physical preparation element, but getting into the actual head coach now of a sports team, it's been extremely rewarding, extremely fulfilling, and it's married quite well now, obviously, with my studies in physical education. Yeah, because obviously a lot of PE teaching, like the sort of principles of teaching, you know, the principles of pedagogy, like so much of that is so relevant to sport coaching. Like they're almost indistinguishable. Did I say that word all right? Like it's like, you know, teaching is coaching, coaching is teaching, in terms of definitely PE teaching and towards sports coaching anyway. So I've taken a ton away from my first year in college, because so much is applicable from my PE teaching education to my sport coaching application. So it's been a really good marriage, and it's been a really interesting last 13 months, putting what I had done for maybe the 18 months preceding that into action. Because I said, you know, kind of halfway through COVID, so it would have been like, you know, end of 2021. So the preceding, like March 2023, I probably did about almost a year and a half of just more personal research and reading and writing down notes. So getting involved with this team really allowed me to sort of actualize a lot of my ideas and concepts. And for the most part, most things worked out really, really well. It was really, really good, you know. Yeah, so that was kind of what I want to talk about, just sort of my evolution as a coach of having sort of moved on from just purely a physical preparation coach to a head sports coach. I suppose what are my aspirations now? I'd probably be lying to say that I wouldn't love to get involved maybe with a county team at some stage, you know, whatever that looks like, minor, under 20, or even with a senior county hurling team at some stage. I think that would be a really nice challenge. But yeah, I mean, the number one goal for me is just to facilitate human potential as best as I can. You know, set up that environment again, an environment that values everyone involved. So an environment built on love, on trust and safety. And again, I'd be heavily influenced from like the work again of Stephen Porges and, you know, The Body Keeps the Score by Basil. Is it Basil? Van der Kluk. I'll double check that now when I'm talking. Like the work of Bruce Perry. Like I did a lot of reading over COVID on like trauma. So like, let me see. Body Keeps Score. I just want to get that name right. Body Keeps. Yeah, Basil van der Kluk. I'll put that in the show notes. Just make sure I'm pronouncing his name right. So like, there's a few books I read there around that. So like. Now, Behave by Sapolsky isn't about trauma necessarily, it's more about behavior, but that's an important book to read too. But then like Polyvagal Theory, as I said, by Stephen Porges, really, really great book. What Happened to You by Dr. Bruce Perry, phenomenal book. The Trauma of Everyday Life by Dr. Mark Epstein, phenomenal book. And then Body Keeps Score is their phenomenal book. Like there are some books now that you know have really shaped my thinking in terms of the type of environment I want to set up for the players, you know, that environment again of love, of trust, of safety. Again, just again, it's just to have an environment that boys want to go to. Like the way I would put it is like when you wake up on that Tuesday morning, the last thing I would want. So in Ireland, we traditionally, well, not traditionally, it depends on the team. Some teams train Monday, Wednesday, but our team train usually Tuesday, Thursday, and a lot of other teams would. That when you're waking up on that Tuesday, Thursday morning, you're not going, oh, I have to go train tonight. Like that's the last thing I'd want. Whereas like, I would like the boys to go, oh, I've trained tonight. Lovely. Do you know what I mean? Lovely. At least I'm gonna have an hour now of play, of fun, you know, an hour where I'm gonna learn more. Like I'd like to think that I can facilitate that too, that boys are actually learning more about the game as well, and that they're enjoying that element too. Yeah, so that's been the last year. And it was just something I want to talk about. And I need to get a podcast out this month as well. So I hope that was somewhat useful and somewhat good. So it's now the 28th of April. We have hurling on telly today, so I'm looking forward to that. And then get this last exam banged out. But I might do another podcast at the end of the year, see how this season went. So currently this season now has been tough in terms of results. So we're in Division 3, which is a much higher standard than Division 4. And there's been a lot of turnover on our team. So some lads just kind of, you know, they've gone away, they've gone travelling, they've moved away. And we've had a lot of lads come back, which is great too. Like to me, that's success, if you want to say that. Like lads who've come back, that really, yeah, that's, you know, even just thinking about, like, get a little bit emotional thinking about that. Like that's what's rewarding, you know, because you feel that lads are, again, kind of like I said earlier, lads are telling boys, you know, come back. It's good. Like it's a good environment. There's a lot of positivity there. You know, you're not being told you're fucking useless or a piece of shit. You know, you're told you're valued, or at least you're getting a sense that you're valued, and again that it's a good environment. It's something that's beneficial to your life too. That's the other thing. I want hurling to be, you know, I think it should be for any coach. You know, you want the sport you coach to be something that's a beneficial additive to someone's life. It's not tearing them down or taking away. So yeah. But anyway, the league this year has been tough so far. We've four games. We drew the first one against, you know, a tough team, tough opponent, and then we've had three close enough defeats. Again, the performance are good, the effort application's unquestionable, and again, that's all I care about, you know. So listen, it's been extremely rewarding the last 13 months with this group. And we'll keep plugging away. And probably at the end of the year I'll do maybe another podcast, particularly if I get any feedback. People are like, yeah, that was kind of good. Listen to that. Some good re I just listened to a podcast there actually with a good friend of mine, Kevin Mulcahy. He was on He was on Joel's podcast, to Just Like Performance. Really, really good. Kev is a really good guy when it comes to like constraints-led approach, speaking about ecological dynamics. Really, really good. We've had some really good conversations. I had him on the podcast too. I think I had him in December, and did I release that, or was it November? And I released that in December. It's a few. It'll be a few episodes back. Not too far back. I'll link it in the show notes. But Kev's very clued in. He's a great guy to talk to and bounce ideas off. And I'm lucky too in Athena too that there's a couple of great coaches there at the moment. Owen Roach, Mike Dwyer with seniors, and Nigel O'Hara, who was with them but stepped down this year. And then there's Paul O'Brien also up in the college that I'm attending at the moment, Dublin City University. Another great guy to bounce ideas off. So I'm very fortunate right now in this moment in my life with some of the people that I'm involved with and that are in my inner circle at the moment, or in my sort of networking circle. So it's a good time. It's a good time, and I'm very grateful for it. So listen, for anyone listening to this, I really appreciate it. Those were just some ramblings and kind of to maybe just fill people in where I'm at in my coaching journey right now. Listen, if you have any feedback or any of that, just stick it up on the socials. I'll probably put this up on Facebook and Twitter. And that's it for today. So until next time, as I always like to say, take care, be well, and stay strong.